Hey, and welcome to Tomorrow. I'm your host, Joshua Topolsky. Today on the show, we discuss shaving Chewbacca, Puff Daddy, and President Bernie Sanders. But first, a word from our sponsor. Today's episode is brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace is the easiest way to create a beautiful website, blog, or online store for you and your ideas. Squarespace features an elegant interface, beautiful templates, and incredible 24/7 customer support. Start building your website today at squarespace.com and our offer code Joshua at checkout to get 10% off. Squarespace, build it beautiful. This episode is also brought to you by Wealthfront. Wealthfront is a low-cost automated investment service that makes it easy to invest your money the right way. It works 24/7 to manage your portfolio, keeping it diversified, customized to your risk profile, and optimizing its trading behavior to keep your tax bill low, all without ever charging commissions. Whether you've got millions or you're just starting out, Wealthfront is the most sophisticated way to invest your money. To sign up and get your free personalized investment portfolio, go to wealthfront.com/tomorrow. My guest today is somebody I've wanted to have on this podcast for a long time, somebody I've wanted to talk to for a long time. He's a writer. He is, I would say, primarily a comic writer, but has done a bunch of other stuff and is a very interesting dude. My guest is Jerry Duggan. Jerry, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. I've wanted to get out of the house and talk to you for a long time as well.
You're in beautiful, right now, beautiful, sunny Los Angeles. I'm in cold, gray New York.
I'm in the marijuana district of the Melrose area.
Really? What does that mean? Yeah. Can you tell me what that means? I'm not a stoner, Jerry.
No. Scuff, it's 5 o'clock somewhere. But here, this neighborhood, the Melrose Avenue, this is where my Los Angeles secret origin happened. I came out here without a car and had 1 month's rent in cash and walked up and down Melrose looking for a job. And I found a comic shop. And so
did you not even like comics before that?
No, I loved comics.
I hated comics, but then that was the only job I could get.
It was the only for
20 years later. I'm now a professional comic writer.
That's how you do it.
Mm. So you literally have one. You actually have one of those LA stories where you lived out of your car.
I mean, almost. I had a buddy who had rang me and said he wasn't going to make. I think it was September's rent, and this was the end of July. So he knew that he had messed up enough in advance that he was putting up the warning flags. And so I said, I'll come out there. I'll pay for September's rent.
Where were you coming from?
New Jersey.
Okay. Yeah.
So it was easier for me to be poor out in L.A. than commute to New York and look for gigs and writing and
what year is this?
And directing. This was late 98. So it was very, very Lebowski. Like, everyone was doing different things. You know, your landlord was also like a stunt motorcycle driver. And everyone's living their stupid dreams.
That's cool. That's a cool job, actually. I used to lie to people at bars in New York when I first moved here. I kind of didn't have a job. My brother and I were building a studio, but a music studio. But I used to, whenever I meet a girl in a bar and she... Oh, for a short period of time, I did data entry at Yamaha. I was putting all of their instruments, all of their different instruments into a spreadsheet. This is how this lie started. I now remember. Sorry,
how to make music terrible.
I don't mean
you take a spreadsheet.
Yeah. And no, really, I was really good at color coding the spreadsheet by types of instrument because Yamaha makes a lot of instruments. But anyhow, I started the lie by saying I work at Yamaha in the city. And people would go what do you do there? And I thought, they don't know what I do. And Yamaha makes 1,000 different things, including motorcycles. And they did at that time. I don't know if they still do. So I used to tell people that I tested Yamaha's dirt bikes. They had a track in a building in Midtown where we tested dirt bikes, new models.
Fantastic.
And 9 times out of 10, people believe me.
That's fantastic.
It just made me seem a lot cooler than I was.
But that's making, coming up with that lie is cooler than any truth or any other lie.
And that's how I became a journalist, really.
So by the time people, I rode motorcycles at Yamaha. Anyhow, so you moved out in 98. Now, but wasn't New York the place to be if you're a comics dude? Am I wrong about that? Especially in like the 90s?
At that time, I wasn't really I wasn't in comic books. I had always wanted to do it, but I sort of came out here thinking like I'm going to write some screenplays, see what I can make happen.
Oh.
And so when I got out here, and look, I was writing. I was working really hard. But I, you know, look, it was very like, you know, it was like the caveman version of it. I didn't have a car. So I got a job at Golden Apple Comics thinking that I was like, okay, this is job A. I'll use it to get job B. Job C might help me to get job C. But the Golden Apple was everyone in the world in the entertainment industry was coming into and out of Golden Apple.
Really?
So that's where I met so many of my friends and through, you know, Brian Posehn or Patton Oswalt or David Mandel or all these writers and performers. We were talking comics, and then when Brian and Patton went off to do a Comedy Central show that was set in a comic book store, they asked me to make it look like a real comic shop. And so that was my entry into
What was that show?
Production gigs. It was called Super Nerds, and those two were it was directed by Bob Odenkirk directed it.
What year was this?
This was, you know, I think
sounds
Comedy
amazing.
Central picked Strip Mall instead of Super Nerds.
Huh.
I'm showing my age now, but this might have been 99 or 2000.
Yeah, but Super Nerds was the show. They would have been way ahead of their time had they picked that up.
Yes, 100%. It was it's ahead of its time. They were putting it up on, they had a theater. It was the HBO Comedy Workspace or Comedy Central Workspace. In any case, they had sort of written some sketches about them in the comic shop, and then it became the pilot. The pilot just didn't go.
See, that's really interesting. I mean, the world has changed dramatically. I want to talk about this. Maybe we could just talk about it now. I was going to say, like, how did you get started? Like, how does one get started in this? Like, you would think that I think a lot of comic writers, my assumption is, and I don't know because I haven't spoken to that many, that they are like lifelong comic book, like, I'm not saying that you're not, but lifelong comic book nerds, and they are like actively, constantly pursuing the craft of writing for comics, and then they somehow, you know, manage to make that happen. You were not thinking that was going to be, you weren't like, I'm going to be a comic writer.
I wanted to write. And I found that I quickly had a lot more traction writing comic books than I did writing TV. You know, the TV and the film business was a lot different then, too.
And think about how limited you were. I mean, because now you can't just give somebody a superpower and then expect it to be. I'm assuming that everything you wrote. By the way, I'm like in my mind, it's like you were writing a sitcom. But
yeah.
Then everybody had fantastic superpowers in it as well. Is that the kind of writing you were doing?
Well, here's the thing. It was making comics. You know, no one was going to hire me to write Wolverine out of the gate. You just go make comic books. The easiest way into comics is to make comics. So you find friends that can do things that you can't. In my case, I needed someone to do everything because I didn't draw, I didn't color, I couldn't even letter, but I could write. And so I met a buddy, Rick Remender, who was selling his own comics at a table at San Diego Comic-Con, and no one was around the table. So I went over and I started talking to him. It was, you know, they were writing comedy, which not a lot of other books were doing at the time. But we exchanged information. And then from that, I started making creator-owned comics. It was, the first one was about Santa Claus after the apocalypse, the true story of Santa Claus after the apocalypse, which were almost caught up to. And then the next one.
We're very close to the apocalypse. Is that what you're saying?
This is it.
Yeah.
Yes.
And we know that Santa will be the only thing left between us and utter destruction. Or is he the destructor? I haven't read this comic.
Santa, you want, I think, to, you know, bring his bag of ass kick and get you out of some jams.
Because the truth is, underneath the suit, he's just a ripped, strapping, ripped guy.
But underneath the suit and then the layers of cookies. Like, there's a lot
I gotta read this. What is this comic called?
The Last Christmas.
Can it be had? Could I go buy it somewhere?
It can, yeah. It's an Image comic. Oh. And so that was, at least that, then that gave me something to show to an editor to go, look, nobody has to say yes to me. I've already been doing this myself.
Right.
And then I think my next comic was, helped sort of solidify at least that you would have to threaten to take me seriously. It was about the Odyssey after a war in Syria and a near future thing that was wonderfully illustrated by Phil Noto.
What was that?
A superstar now. It's called The Infinite Horizon.
Okay.
And then from that, now you have samples.
Yeah. Then it's like you're off to the races.
But, I hope. Yeah.
But to me, it's interesting because we've this evolution. I mean, what you're describing in that comic store in L.A. is so perfectly illustrates how crazy our reality is now compared to, what, let's say 20 years ago. When was that? You said 98, 99,
Yeah, so this was the early 2000s of – and being the guy that answered the phone at the comic shop and then saying, hey, it's so-and-so from, you know, X production company, I need 12 copies of Constantine.
Right.
You know, and you're like, oh, well, I guess that's coming up.
Yeah. And then 25 years later, it got developed into a show. But it's interesting to think about, like, nerd culture, for lack of a better way to describe it, or geek culture. I don't know if you prefer either or you don't like them, but is like the dominant culture, basically, in pop culture.
Yeah, 100% dominant.
I mean, overwhelmingly, the most popular movies, the most popular TV shows, what people are talking about on the internet so often, it is like stuff that when I was a kid, and I was a fairly nerdy kid, I was not cool, I guess, like really not cool. And nothing I was interested in was considered cool by anybody's standards.
Yeah, you're talking to another not cool kid too.
Yeah, and my assumption is for a lot of, to me, to see it, I think A.O. Scott wrote something about this, about sort of how the nerds have won and a lot, and yet like there's sort of a failure to recognize it in a lot of the viewers.
Yeah, I don't feel like – I mean, I do feel like we were a part of a subculture that sort of now is the dominant – you know, we fell into our own Back to the Future 2 sort of future, like, oh, my God, we won. Look at this. The casino is a Spider-Man casino, you know.
Yeah, but is that winning?
I don't know, actually. I mean, here's the thing. I worry all the time that, you know, the bubble could burst and that – look, the one thing I miss, and I truly miss this, and this is no knock on the superhero supremacy, we'll call it. But, you know, I do miss studios making films like that were just not supposed to be 15 movies. Like,
right.
I loved Kiss Kiss Bang Bang from Shane Black. And like, you feel like that was a miracle when it was made, that anyone made a movie that was not supposed to be a theme, you know, like a big franchise.
It was like
franchise.
A movie. Yeah,
and maybe there are places like Netflix that are sort of filling the void a little bit, and that as the businesses change, you know, that stuff will come back. TV is certainly in a golden age, but yeah, for movies now, you just do feel like the only things that are getting certainly big studio support are you know, big sweeping epics and
right.
shared universes.
Right. Well, the shared universe stuff is to me, it's like daunting. And also I feel in some way limiting to some of these projects. Like it's so, they seem so reliant on referencing one another.
Yes, and it's
connecting.
A lot to carry,
it's
right?
almost like, make the most expensive television show ever. That's what you should do. Like, because to me, TV storytelling is so much of a more appropriate art form for, I mean, comics are, the way these stories are told, like, it's issue after issue after issue. It never stops. It literally never stops. Like, one of the things that I always thought was the greatest thing about comic book storytelling, and I thought this as a kid and I still think it as an adult, is like, this story, this character, these people, like they never have to die. Like it never has to go away. It's not necessarily dependent on like somebody's budget or the whims of what is popular or whatever. These are characters that are traded and tweaked and reimagined and have stories told around them forever and ever. And I never want the party to end. I'm one of the, you know, when I would hang out with my friends, I was always like, sleep over. You know, like I didn't want to not just like keep having a good time. And I think that comics are like that. And it's like movies don't really do that.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I never dreamed that the comics that I loved would become movies because the comics were enough. You know, I had a cliffhanger, and then I knew that on the third Wednesday when I ran down there, back then I think it was even Monday or Tuesday when I was buying comics off a rack, that, you know, there would be a big splash page that would sort of solve the cliffhanger that I'd been thinking about for a month.
Right.
And, you know, serialized entertainment, yeah, is a little bit different than coming up with, you know, a 90-minute movie that has to set up two other movies.
I mean, hasn't it in a way, and I'm really curious to hear your take on this, but I mean, when I watch like the Avengers movies, I feel like the complexity of, I mean, it's true for the X-Men films, I mean, for all of the biggest franchises, I feel like the complexity of these characters and their stories, I mean, maybe this just goes without saying, but the thing that I love about reading comics, much of it is not translatable to a 2.5-hour blockbuster film.
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, there's things that only sort of work on a comics page. Sometimes the thing that is the best thing about comics is what happens between the panels. You know, your imagination fills in that gap, and that is not, you know, a function of the films.
Right. But there's also the deep storytelling. I feel like I watch the Avengers movies and they're like trying to compact some complex origin story into like a 10-minute aside in the grand scheme of this like action. What is an action movie? Like, here's an example. Have you seen the new Batman vs. Superman trailer?
I saw one of them. Yeah, the unmasking, right?
You haven't seen the extended one?
No, I don't think I have.
Are you familiar with the film at all?
A little bit.
Are you allowed? Can you talk about it? Are you working on anything that would make it prevent you from talking about this film?
No, I mean, look, what's the right way to say this? It's
there is no right way.
No, yeah, I guess, you know, it's not really my vision of what I would hope that would be, but like that's a knee-jerk reaction to an aesthetic. Like I hope that it's good. I want it to be good. You know, my son is 6, but you know, I couldn't take him to the last Superman movie.
Oh my God, the last Superman movie was so violent.
Yeah, so I mean,
really
like
dark.
And maybe also it's just that I'm aging, which is, you know, sure beats the alternative. But the, like,
what do you mean?
You know, I'm getting a little older, and yeah, or dying.
I guess that's the that's one alternative.
But you know, I do. Yeah, as a father, you just sort of are. It's a weird conversation to have with your kid about why he's not going to see a Superman movie.
Well, it's also a bummer to me that you're familiar with Doomsday, right? The character.
Yeah, yeah.
So Doomsday, I'm sorry, I'm going to spoil. Can I spoil this? It's in the trailer. I just spoiled
yeah,
this
no,
for
you.
I mean, if you haven't seen it.
I remember, yeah, we'll
Doomsday's
go back, we'll
in
circle
the
back to
Doomsday's
Doomsday.
Doomsday's in the movie. Doomsday has the most, in my opinion, I was just talking to my wife about this last night. I was actually bitching about the trailer and how upset I am. I'm not that big of a comic book nerd, by the way, but I know enough to be dangerous. And I know the Doomsday origin story, which to me is like one of the coolest. It's one of the most fascinating, awesome ideas that I've ever seen come out of like the comic book sphere in terms of like, where does this character come from? There's always like a story. Mm-hmm. That one to me is like, it's so complete and so interesting and so different. And it's just like, there's no way they can't tell that story in this new movie because it would take too long. But also, and it would be very weird, I think, in the context of what the movie's actually seems to be about. But also, like, I think they're just going to change it. You know, I think they're just going to be like, Lex Luthor creates Doomsday. That to me is like kind of rips out one of the fundamental like components of a comic book soul.
Well, here's the thing. Whether you're making, I think, a movie, which I really don't have, I've had some limited experience with, or comics, and then I've had a lot of experience sort of looking at older characters and sort of going, well, what do we want to take with us? Because it's sort of like packing for a trip. Last summer, I did, during Secret Wars, which was a Marvel publishing event.
Secret Wars reboot.
Yeah, well, yeah, it was the end of Jonathan Hickman's long story that was in The Avengers and in Fantastic Four, and it was a great opportunity for the rest of us, as we knew that the Marvel universe was ending, to sort of go, what do we want to replace it with. And I'll simply throw this out as an example of I pitched a Western. And so it was the Marvel characters in a town called Timely that there were no superpowers and that, you know, these characters are grinding on each other. And like, what do we get out of that? And one of the characters that was going to come out of that was a character named Red Wolf. And he was way back in the day, he was supposed to be Captain America around issue 300, I think. And then the publishing plan changed. This is like years and years ago. But we thought, hey, let's get an updated Red Wolf and bring him forward. And so that ended up being a real... I guess what I'm trying to say is it's not like these movies aren't – they have to make choices and they have to make choices based on, you know, sometimes decades – sometimes your favorite story is sort of dragged to the trash serve the movie.
Sure, of
and
course.
So it's you know, a bummer when that happens to your favorite story, but, you know, I'm hoping...
Wow, thanks. I feel like you're dismissing my complaint, but...
No, I'm not.
Fine, Jerry, I get it. You don't care
here's the
about,
thing is
about
that,
Doomsday's origin story.
No, I care about all the... here's the thing. The stories are not undone by a movie that you didn't like.
Right.
Well,
I don't know if I'll like
I don't know.
I might like the movie.
I hope we do. I do, you know, I know what I've seen of... Civil War looked. I think it was Devin Faraci on Twitter who wrote something I thought very insightful. He said, and forgive me if this was maybe it was you. I don't know whose tweet I'm going to steal, but that the characters in Civil War looked like they loved each other, but they were fighting. And you know the characters on the other side really like they're really leaning into the sort of almost glaring hatred.
Right.
Of each other.
Right. Well, are you talking about Batman Superman?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, there's definitely – I mean, that's an interesting – I feel like the Batman Superman concept is literally one – it's like Frank Miller's Dark Knight Returns battle. Maybe there was a Batman Superman fight that predates that was a major event, but I don't remember it. I don't know about it. I just feel like there's this idea that fight – I feel like that fight is like really important in the universe of those characters, but also it is not actually part of like the current universe of those characters. Set in a future. You know what I mean?
It was set in a future, and it was a fight that Bruce Wayne threw.
Right.
I don't know if people remember that. You know, he wanted to lose the fight. The fight was the distraction.
Yeah.
In grand Batman plans, he was faking his death and moving on.
Spoiler alert. If you haven't read Dark Knight Returns, really bad spoiler. Yeah. Like, just, you know what? Maybe we'll preface that. Maybe I'll have a spoiler alert before you. who hasn't read it? It was published
but
in 1986.
I do feel like, yeah, that's what I was going to say, is spoilers have an expiration.
Yeah, I mean, really.
I feel like I can be the Dark Knight that gets hunted for that spoiler.
Wow, you're the hero that we deserve. Okay, I see where you're going with that. But so actually, let me talk about some of the comics that, I mean, we've talked about some of the things you've written, but like you're writing currently Chewbacca, is this correct?
Yeah, Chewbacca.
Deadpool?
Deadpool.
You've done some Batman recently?
Uncanny Avengers. I did some Batman last year.
Uncanny Avengers is you're currently working on?
Yeah.
Which is a whole different set of Avengers.
Yeah, it is. It was a team that Steve Rogers put together to promote unity between humans and mutants when they needed it most. And the Rick Remender, the writer who wrote the first two volumes, did this really amazing sort of sprawling sci-fi adventure. And, you know, I knew that if I tried to duplicate that I was going to fall flat. So I went in a different direction, and 8 months later in this new Marvel universe that isn't a reboot, it's just a restart that now we have a big – now it's a three-way clash. The Inhumans have ascended and I'm at the intersection of what that means for mutants, humans, and in – humans.
This is a fertile ground for recent comic characters, I feel like, in film as well, is this sort of like divide and misunderstanding between like normal people and people who are from outer space or people.
Well, I mean, yeah, what if we gave a message board, you know, or a comments thread superpowers? It's like that to me is the, you know, look at how awful those are today. Like if you add, you know, the rough and tumble, you know, somebody that can shoot lasers out of their eyes, it's going to get a whole lot worse.
Well, they probably wouldn't be on a comment. They probably wouldn't be commenting.
Yeah, it's my a comment section,
like,
in real life.
My guess is like, you know, if you actually have superpowers, you're probably going to go do something with them. Right? You're not going to be like, I'll just stay at home and comment on this.
Yeah.
On this
and
thread.
What is, and you're potentially a celebrity, or you're a, you know, what does that mean for you? It's sort of fascinating.
Well, yeah, it is a little bit. I feel like comics are much more meta now. Well, at least I think this is because of the films, maybe. They do seem more meta in the sense that, like, we recognize that these people wouldn't be treated as necessarily normal. I think that there was, I think with Batman and Superman, you've always gotten that. Certainly with other, I mean, X-Men, a lot of the X-Men storylines are about, like, how the public reacts to the X-Men. But I do think, it is interesting now that, like, the celebrity aspect of it has entered it. I mean, and maybe that's just because of Iron Man. And
yeah,
you know, maybe that's just that character. And it's so popular in pop culture now that it has affected all the other comics. But I don't know.
We're sort of exploring that a little bit in the new run of Deadpool. Since we last saw him, we moved ahead 8 months in the universe. So you can change any status quo that you really wanted, and so we leaned into the meta on that, and we just said, look, he's a character that has a video game right now, that has a movie in the pipeline, and we're gonna make him very famous. And we don't quite know why that's happened yet, or I know why, but readers haven't quite gotten there, and we're having fun exploring you know, what seems to be a wonderful life and is actually kind of a horrible life.
isn't that actually the way it is for most real celebrities? I mean, isn't it? Don't we imagine? I mean, isn't that why they end up being like ODing and doing all the other fucked up shit that they do? I feel like it's actually we're like, oh, got to be so great to be famous, and then it maybe is not as great as it seems.
I've been to Disneyland with, you know, friends who have been on TV shows, and everyone sort of with their kids and stuff. And you wouldn't believe some of the things that people run up, and just it's a strange situation, you know, because on the one hand, obviously that's the job. You know, you could also go do another job. But,
right.
You know, there some of these guys are the most patient people in the world, where you just. You know that they would want to say something else, but they don't say it.
Right, it's like that picture of Billy Corgan at Six Flags or whatever. He's on the roller coaster.
He gets to ride a log flume.
he's like, what do you want? He actually responded, right? He's like, what do you want from me? I was at Six Flags. I was trying to enjoy myself.
Yeah,
it does suck. It's like you can't enjoy the roller coaster, Billy. People are just going to take pictures of you the whole time.
You got to be cool the whole time.
Yeah. Well, he looked very unhappy.
No.
I want to do this. I want to take a quick break. And then
sure.
I have some very specific things I want to ask you. I want to quickly talk about Wealthfront. Now, look, you know you should be investing your money for the long term. You've probably thought, well, how should I do that? You know, you probably Googled it. Maybe you Binged it. You duck-duck-goed it. Is that how you say it? I'm not sure how you say it. The point is, I'm sure you've investigated the way to do it, but trying to do it yourself, especially the right academically proven way, is complex and time-consuming and, frankly, takes away from all of your other hobbies, assuming you have hobbies. Luckily, Wealthfront makes it easy for anyone to get access to world-class long-term investment management. It's an online automated service that invests your money for you. It's transparent and accessible. You can view all of your accounts in one place, whether they're personal, joint, or retirement. You can see every trade Wealthfront makes on your behalf in your dashboard, anywhere you go on your desktop or in your pocket with the mobile app. And you can sign up for an account at Wealthfront.com in just minutes. And it goes right to work monitoring your portfolios around the clock and taking action as soon as an opportunity arises, which I think we can both agree you will not do. With Wealthfront, you pay less than $5 a month to invest a $30,000 account, and you don't have to have much to get started. You can open an account with as little as $500. Tens of thousands of people across the country have already signed up. In fact, Wealthfront manages over $2.6 billion in client assets, and it's grown over 20 times in the past 2 years. So go to Wealthfront.com/tomorrow to see your free personalized investment portfolio. You'll see the customized allocation they recommend for your profile. And just for tomorrow, listeners, if you sign up to invest, Wealthfront will manage your first $15,000 entirely free of charge for life.
That means in addition to never paying commissions or any hidden fees, you also won't pay any management fees to have that first $15,000 invested. Claim your offer today at Wealthfront.com/tomorrow. For compliance purposes, I have to tell you that Wealthfront Incorporated is an SEC-registered investment advisor. Brokerage services are offered through Wealthfront Brokerage Corporation, member FINRA, and SIPC. This is not a solicitation to buy or sell securities. Investing in securities involves risk, and there is the possibility of losing money. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Please visit Wealthfront.com to read their full disclosure. If you enjoyed today's episode, and let's be honest, you probably did, because I try to make this very enjoyable. You might want to check out another awesome podcast called Ventured. It's a series produced by iconic venture capital firm Kleiner Perkins. You may be heard of them. They've invested in Google, Amazon, Twitter, and Uber, just a couple of small, you know, little companies that are just trying to get their foot in the door. The Ventured podcast takes a close look at some of the fastest growing trends in Silicon Valley, as well as behind the scenes interviews with tech giants from companies like Netflix and Google. The podcast covers topics on pressing business and technology issues and the implications to our lives. Some of their conversation topics include the inside story of how Uber built a global business, how Google thinks about hiring, management, and culture, how cyber hacking is the new global battlefield, and even practical tips for entrepreneurs, like tips for surviving a tech bubble. Check them out on iTunes or SoundCloud by searching Ventured. It'll be worth a listen. We're back with Jerry Duggan. We've been talking about comics. I actually want to talk about, obviously, like, this is very much your life, and you're doing this every day. I'm curious, like, you're writing Chewbacca.
Yeah.
Okay, which is, Chewbacca is part of a massive, and now...
It sounds like the easiest job in the world, right?
No, it doesn't sound easy at all. It actually sounds very complex, which is what I want to ask. Like, so Star Wars is completely out of control right now. I mean, like, the hype level on the Star Wars universe, the marketing of the Star Wars universe and Star Wars paraphernalia. I mean, I feel like it's at a level that I don't think I've ever seen any marketing campaign at in my lifetime. I mean, literally there's like Star Wars makeup. There's like obviously a billion toys. There's video games. Like everything is kind of built around this new movie that's coming out, The Force Awakens, which is the J.J. Abrams. I mean, I don't know why I'm telling you this. You know it. I'm certainly not telling
any of the movie.
There's going to be a new Star Wars film. Apparently, it's all focused on Jar Jar Binks. Have you read
Darth
this theory?
Jar Jar.
Have you seen this? Read this theory on? I think it's on Reddit, which is that Jar Jar is actually the Phantom Menace, that he is like pulling the strings from behind the scenes in the first three movies. Not the original three, but the newer three.
The prequels.
The prequels, yeah.
Yeah.
Has it been debunked?
I don't know that it's been debunked, but I would like love it to be true, but it's not true.
The theory is like George Lucas, there was such a backlash that they were going to reveal him as this evil character in the second movie or third movie.
But even
there was
such a backlash. Yeah, where you're just like, I don't want that guy to be the bad guy. Like, do we have Darth Vader? Now there's this like... Muppet guy, yeah.
It would be pretty cool. I mean, what if just that was the case? Like, what if Jar Jar Binks makes an appearance at the end of the new one? It's like the whole time it's been Jar Jar Binks.
I mean,
that would
be the
greatest troll in the history of...
It would be the greatest troll in the world, and then you'd leave the theater, and it would be like people would be setting fire to the billboards.
Yeah.
And...
be cool, though. A lot of publicity on that. Get a lot of heat on that.
A lot of page ones.
So anyhow, you're writing Chewbacca. Yeah. Now, is there a crazy... Do you get, like, a crazy Bible, like, of Chewbacca facts and things you can and can't do with the character before you start writing that character?
No. They were very,
do whatever
very...
you want. You
want
to put them in shorts? That's no problem.
Well, they want you know, an original story that you want to tell.
Can you put them in shorts?
Yeah, biker shorts.
Okay.
What we find out is that the bandolier was a messenger bag, and the messenger bag got lasered off.
Wow.
That's the big...
That's actually the whole...
Chewy.
That's the whole focus of the series that you're writing.
Yes. No, but they want you to be excited, and then when they read something from you that makes them excited, everyone wants to say yes. So even when you have a request or you have a story beat that is a no, everyone is looking for ways to make it a yes.
And, right.
With Chewy, what I did was I wrote each line twice, once for the artist and the editor and the Lucasfilm story group in English. That was parenthetical. And then underneath that, the roar that was written out in onomatopoeia for the letterer that had to be copied exactly.
So you wrote his dialogue.
translated, and then also in what is the language called?
Well, he's Wookiee, so he's from Kashyyyk, so it's you know, the Wookiee language.
It's called Wookiee.
Yeah, I would think. Actually, you know,
you would think you should know because you're writing him into a comic book right now.
I know, but he doesn't. Luckily for me, I can be dumb. He doesn't walk around and go, "Does anyone here speak Wookiee?" Or he does, but that's a deleted scene.
But don't you want? He's like at a bar late. But if Chewie was revealed to have a family and you know, or something, you wanted to like just drop a bomb, like, oh, by the way, maybe he does have a family. By the way, I don't know.
I got to have a little. I don't know what megaton it would be, but the fifth issue of Chewie has a nice bit of.
Is it out?
It's out in, I think four is out this week four is out mid-December, and then five is out the first week of January.
Can he shave? What if he shaves? What happens? What's under there?
I think he would look like Rob Gronkowski. He'd be like Rob Gronkowski looks like a shaved Chewbacca, a shaved Wookiee. Like a giant
sort
of. Is that
an insult? Is that a compliment?
No, I think it's a compliment. Big sort of ball catching savant.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, so there's a rumor that Chewie dies in this new movie. This is a hot rumor that's going on.
But there's
around.
A rumor that everyone dies in the new movie, right? Or no?
I don't think so. The hot rumors I've heard are Luke Skywalker's the bad guy.
Uh-huh.
Chewie dies.
Uh-huh.
And Adam Driver's character is on a campaign to actually reincarnate Darth Vader, and that Darth Vader makes an appearance in the movie.
Which is
a very cool idea, but also very horrible.
I really know nothing.
You don't know if Chewie dies.
No.
Because you can just keep writing him as if he doesn't die, if he does die.
I'm going to keep writing him no matter what.
Will it bother you if he dies in the film?
You know, I was, yeah, but look, if it serves the story, I mean, I shot Cap, well, I'm not going to spoil 1872. I was going to say I did a horrible thing to a character I loved in the Western.
I feel like I know what you were about to say.
Sometimes really bad things happen to your favorite character.
Good.
And then, look, that also really can make things weird with the fans of that character, the person with the tattoo on their arm.
Right.
That character.
Have you ever encountered a psychotic superfan who's mad with something that you did to a character?
Not me, no. I've been very lucky in that.
Well, you don't leave the house.
My fan interactions. Well, that's true. I'm practically
only for podcasts.
Even today, like I felt like somebody rubbed a dumb genie lamp and out I popped, and I'm like, what year is it? Oh my God, Star Wars billboards. You know, I work out of the house.
Oh, you work
I
from
don't
home.
Leave. Yeah, yeah. I have an office at the house, so I literally knocked spider webs off of the car to come down here.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Do you like walk? Are you a walker?
Yeah, I try to walk. I have an elliptical at the house.
What part of LA are you in? I'm not trying to get your address, but what part of LA are you in?
I live at 354 Fakey Street.
Fakey Street?
We moved just north. Yeah, my neighbor Tom Cruise.
Yeah. 356 Fakey Street. You moved north.
We moved north.
Do you have like a walking neighborhood? Like, can you walk around? I know like there's like people who live in Silver Lake can walk around.
No, not really. I mean, there's places nearby, but
you're like one of these LA
people.
It's
very much the suburbs sort of now.
Right.
I was on when I was at Attack of the Show. It was a live TV show, live daily TV show.
We're gonna get into that.
Years ago, but I ended up finding an apartment around the corner, so I walked to work then as well. But that was, you know, you would walk up and down Hauser, and there's, you know, Five Guys or movie theater or whatever. This is a little bit different. But my son, you know, I wanted him to be in a good public school, so right. That was important to us.
That does seem to be a thing that happens. Parents want their kids to go to a good school, and the next thing you know, you can't get a coffee. You can't physically access a place to give you coffee. Let's talk about TV because you've written for TV. You wrote for Attack of the Show, which I made a couple of Talking Head appearances on.
Great on that.
Thank
show.
You. That sounds like you're mocking me. Are you mocking me?
No, not at all. Gavin,
Did Gavin Purcell, is he who sort of introduced you? Like, I forget how, or maybe remember. It was Sean Jordan.
Sean and Gavin both. Well, I met Gavin, actually. I didn't meet Gavin until he was doing Late Night. Sean, I was the guy who would reach out to me. He's the person I knew from Attack of the Show. I don't know if was I guess Gavin and Sean were there at the same time or no?
There was some overlap.
Gavin
there.
Was in the shadows, like Emperor Palpatine, which is exactly how I think of him. But Attack of the Show was really weird because how long were you there? How many years were you writing for it?
I turned a 2-week writing stint into almost 5 years.
Wow!
But
was that a full time gig?
Yeah, the really good news for me, though, was that that was a live show. So at 5 o'clock every day, that show, whether it was great or whether it was awful, was done. And you didn't have to worry about posts. You didn't have to worry about edits. You didn't have to worry about notes. All of that was gone.
Right.
So it freed up a lot of time to write comics.
It was like nerd TRL.
Yes.
Sort of. In fact, I bet that was the pitch in the meeting, right?
Yes.
It was like, it's like TRL, but for nerds.
It's for TRL, yeah, but for people that spend more money on tech.
Exactly. But it's interesting. I mean, that show also may have been a little bit ahead of its time. I mean, I think it was from a different time, but it was there's nothing else like it on TV now.
Here's my read on it, yeah, was that it was ahead of its time, but it was also trapped in the past, meaning I could take last night's Daily Show and send you a link to watch it. And I could put that on your Facebook page. I could tweet it.
Yeah.
But the Attack was very forward looking. And I think there's DNA of the stuff that we were doing still around today. You know, a lot of the viral stuff that started happening in Late Night or the guest stuff. We did a lot of fun sort of different things with guests that I think people do now. But that the problem with Attack was that it was built so that to drive eyes to the channel.
Right.
And that just wasn't how people were consuming their media anymore. You know, it needed to be an app. It needed to have the freedom to live online. But because we were fair use, you know, we couldn't license or have clips up for anything more than like 10 days.
Right. And this was in an era when, I mean, people don't – this is like a – I mean, it wasn't that long
ago. It's ancient history now.
It really is ancient history, but it's not that long ago.
Yeah.
But, like, people really didn't – nobody knew how to use – like, nobody knew what to do with video. Nobody knew how to put video anywhere. They didn't – TV shows didn't even think about digital a few years ago. It was not that long ago. I mean, when did it go off the air? 2011, 10?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
So, I mean, it wasn't that long ago. People really did not know how to – I mean, none of these networks knew what to do. They still don't know, actually. If you look at
still figuring it out.
If you look at what networks do, I was looking at my Apple TV last night and I was like, "Oh, I want to watch this show on FX." And you go into like the FX app and it's like, "Oh, we have clips of the show, but we don't actually have the show on here." And it's like, "What?
Yeah.
Why? I'm real willing to give you eyeball dollars for your ads. Just I don't care. Put a Sonic ad on there. They actually do. Just put so there's so many Sonic ads. And as a person who lives in New York, I can tell you there are no Sonics here.
Yeah, there are no Sonics. Sonic has no care for you.
And right, but I know all of what their hottest meats are right now. I can tell you all about the chicken. They got chicken wings with different flavors. At any rate, but it's like, dude, I'll pay you. I'll even give you money. Just give me some way to watch your shit. And people still don't do it. And so like Attack of the Show came from, first off, G4 was a channel that should have been like way ahead of the curve but wasn't for some reason on this stuff.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
And Attack of the Show was a show that was actually really interested in things that have become totally central pop culture, like comics and, you know, comic book characters, but also technology in a way where, like, they'd go cover an Apple event and, like, Chris Hardwick would be walking around with a microphone interviewing people.
Yeah.
Like, it was, like, a big deal, which, it was a big deal. But it's, like, it's interesting to think about because it was, like, this brief moment. I feel like people will forget about this moment where all this shit was so new and so weird. And there were not places where you could hear about it except on the internet.
Right.
There's nothing TV about it.
There's nothing. And look, I think it could succeed again or succeed for the first time if it was put on now.
Yeah.
You know, Sci-Fi or, you know, Comcast owns it.
Right.
Put it on Sci-Fi.
I think
Sci-Fi is even trying to walk back from that terrible rebrand they did where it was like spelled with an accent and like
Oh God, right. Why would you do that?
Yeah. I mean, sci-fi. it was like throwing your they threw away all the goodwill they had after
Battlestar. It's just like psych. I just thought it was like psych. I was like, just kidding. I don't know. I know that's not how you spell psych, but
yeah.
What is it? S-Y-F-Y, right?
Yes, that's it.
There's so many other ways to tackle that problem.
So many.
I mean, just a billion that don't require you to completely destroy the spelling.
To completely confuse everyone about what you stand for.
It's like,
for.
You know it stands for, right, you know it stands for science fiction, right?
Anyhow. Yeah, but then it's in quotes. Just for quotes on.
Right. I think there is actually kind of a vacuum for really fringe conversation in any linear manner. Like, I mean, there are lots of web shows. There are lots of like little web things and weird YouTube channels and stuff. But like, there's not any, nobody has made much of an attempt at like putting really brainy, really weird nerds on television and letting them do their thing. I mean, we see it more now, but I don't think that, like, you know what?
And we're sitting right here.
I know.
We could do it.
Why
don't
somebody
just
give us a television show? I don't understand what the problem is. I've talked about this a bunch of times. I did a pilot for FX, which was the whole idea was like a talk show for nerds, mm-hmm. like about things that other people aren't going to talk about. Like the kind of thing where, you know, and I might sound bitter when I say this, but like if you look at like Gamergate, for instance, Gamergate was a conversation that was happening way for a long time before Colbert ever mentioned it or picked up on it or anybody was really talking about it in like the higher pop culture zones.
Right.
I just feel like there is a conversation to be had there. I mean, some of the stuff we're talking about would never fly on a regular talk show or a regular TV show. But there are other people who want to talk about this stuff and hear about it. Again, just give us a show.
But I do think eventually things will fragment where there'll be the Tomorrow app. You know what I mean? And have it just be video?
Damn right there will be.
Yeah.
In fact, it's a great time to announce the Tomorrow app coming this fall, next fall. No, I'm kidding. There's no Tomorrow app. But
Can I get in on this?
But things like that are absolutely... Well, what's nice is actually now we're getting to a point where like people are starting to lose the distinction between it's TV or it's the internet. You know,
yes.
That digital is just merging everything into one thing, right? And like at some point, I mean, this is very true, is that tomorrow may be a channel on your Apple TV where there's a bunch of shows and a bunch of different things. I'm not saying that's what I'm doing, but I'm saying that like one mm-hmm. could see that happening. That will happen, and that is happening with a lot of publishers now. So I guess when you think about it, fuck TV. TV.
TV's
for bozos.
TV's sort of the guy who has the nice house now. Who it's you can see it on a cliff and it's eroding. I mean, it'll all be digital,
right?
I don't know what the cable. Yeah, look.
They didn't need a network or a cable provider to do Jessica Jones or any of the other shows they're doing.
So,
I don't know what does TV even mean?
Jessica Jones. I like Daredevil, but I haven't watched it yet.
I have watched 3 episodes of Jessica Jones, and I'm still not sure if I like it.
Okay,
but I think that's I'm a misogynist member of the patriarchy for. I've seen a lot of articles like finally a show that takes on the patriarchy, and I do think that there are some very large themes that are being taken on in that show that relate to how bad men are, for sure. But also, it's like a pretty good show, even if it's not taking on the patriarchy.
Yeah,
you know. But I'm just not sold on it yet.
Okay.
Anyhow, you haven't seen any of it?
I'm gonna binge watch it during the holidays.
You should do that. I mean, don't spend time with your family. Don't try to look.
They're like, don't you have something to binge watch? You know, like,
like we're really, you know, we're really busy in here. Actually, can you go back to your cave, wherever you are normally?
It is. It's a cave. It looks like a comic shop. I have a spinner.
Did you bring
rack
the set?
There,
you brought that comic shop set just home.
Well, you know, the comic shop set was like a really good. You know, we reached out to like people that own their own character, like Mike Mignola for Hellboy and. So the fake comic shop was like sort of the best comic shop I was ever in.
Really?
It was fun. Yeah.
Did you get some killer, highly collectible issues?
There were
to throw
some
on them?
Leave behinds and some Bowen busts
really?
And so forth.
Do you collect? I mean, are you a collector?
I guess I used to be, and I don't anymore. I had a short box of comics that I was putting one of every comic that I had collaborated on away from my son, and now that's a long box of comics, and soon to be probably two long boxes. But I treated myself to the Sideshow Collectibles Hulk when I got the Hulk gig a year ago. Mm-hmm. But that was about where I could.
They couldn't throw. I just some, can't they throw, if throw I, some if, your
if,
way.
Yeah, well, if I, you know, that would take up so much free time. Dear sir, I'm writing Deadpool.
You may.
Please send me your finest Deadpool merchandise.
But you are writing Deadpool, and Deadpool's about to be a huge movie.
Yeah.
And did you have any interaction on, like, did you speak to the people who were writing that movie and say, oh, here's things we do with Deadpool?
No, I never had that opportunity because.
You'd think they'd want to talk to people who write Deadpool.
They may have, but, you know, the way that the movie business, you know, Deadpool had not stalled, but it had been written and conceived many years ago, sort of before I was even writing Deadpool. So, you know, now that they've been able to resurrect it when it leaked, I don't know if you remember, there was like the test footage and the internet went so crazy.
Was that like the animated thing?
Yeah, it was. I think it was like motion cap, but it was Ryan Reynolds. I think that's really the.
And there was some. There was like a truck thing with a truck.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so there was. This
I was
gag
like, "What
with
is this?" I was like, "What is this that I'm watching?" I couldn't figure out if it was a fan made thing.
You know, Tim Miller, who was the director years ago, did it as proof of concept and showed it to the executives at Fox. And at that time, look, I don't know what their thought process was. They were like, "We're not moving forward with a PG-13 or a hard R.
We don't want to do it. We can't imagine a dark or adult superhero story. Sorry. Just this is not an audience for it.
It's a wrap. You guys are wrapped.
You know, one wants to see an adult storyline with a comic book character in it.
Not
sorry.
Anymore.
Please leave.
Anyhow. Batman 1989.
Yeah.
But Ryan Reynolds, I thought, really, like, that was the, you know, he was born to inhabit this role.
Finally, a role for Ryan.
I've really been impressed with how he's thrown himself into it.
That sounds mean. Ryan Reynolds is one of those guys who's like, he's kind of grown on me a little bit as an actor. He's one of the people, when I first saw him in a couple of movies, I'm like, I'm never going to like this guy's work. He just rubs me the wrong way for some reason. And I do feel like Bradley Cooper also felt this way to me. I've got a thing against regular white guys.
Yeah.
I hate white guys.
A lot of white guy aggression.
Yeah. But then like they grow on you. You know, they stick around. You're like, I guess this guy's okay.
I love the movie that Ryan Reynolds did. Was it called Safe House with Denzel? I really enjoyed that movie.
Is that where Ryan Reynolds is some kind of informant?
He's an operator. Yeah.
He's an operator?
Oh, that's a different movie. And the one, you know, I'm excited. Speaking of, this is going to be the bane of your existence.
You have to say nice things about Ryan Reynolds, don't you?
No, I don't. I could come out
contractually
here
and obligated to praise Ryan
Reynolds.
Well,
here's the thing, you know, I'm not, you know, I don't know whether it's really their own thing. You know, I'm doing my take on Deadpool, and they're doing their take on Deadpool. I hope their take on Deadpool is great, but I really have been enjoying all the things that he's been doing to promote it on the internet. You know, did you see his Halloween video dressed as Deadpool with the kids
and
stuff?
Yeah.
I thought, you know what? I was like, he nailed it. He nailed the performance.
He does seem legitimately into it.
Yes. It's like, so great.
Like in a nerdy, non-normal way.
And now I can't think of another actor I would ever want to see in this role.
Well, it's a good thing he's young. Got many years of playing Deadpool.
I hope they get to Deadpool 13, 14, and 15, and it's.
I feel like they would reboot it before they're in double digits.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, there's no way the Avengers is going, you know, what are they, on their third movie now? The next one will be the third one? But in the total universe, they've got, like, what, 15, 16 or something?
Well, I think of these roles now as like, James Bond. Eventually, there will be, you know, Sean Connery will yield to the next. I'm not saying it's going to be Lazenby. But, like, you know,
the greatest Bond, the forgotten Bond.
Yeah, I know, the forgotten Bond. But I would think, you know, eventually, and plus, look, you get the Infinity Gauntlet, you could do any number of things.
Wow. Interesting. Well, it is actually, it's funny, but comic book stories, more than any stories probably that any filmmaker could tap into, are like, yeah, there's a different guy who's Captain America now because that's just what happened. You know, oh, there's a different actor, different storyline. Like, yeah, this is the other universe. You didn't know that?
Yeah.
This is the second universe that this person is actually
that,
in.
That guy fell and someone picked up the mantle and here we go.
There you go.
A new story. And that, by the way, that character, that quote replacement becomes someone else's – that's their number one top shelf go-to character. And that's sort of what I think people forget when they're – stomping around like Godzilla's online is that, like, it's a story and it's a character and it's someone else's favorite character. The issue you hated the most is someone else's favorite thing that I've signed copies for.
That
you,
is,
you know what I mean?
But that is true. That is actually the beauty. That's one of the beauties of the comic book form. Wait, you were going to say something about how there's something involving white guys that I would not be happy about.
Oh, there's that new there's like the new white guy conspiracy movie, right? It's Christian Bale and Brad Pitt and Ryan Reynolds.
The
and,
Big Short?
Yes. I sort of am
The Big
really
Short, it's directed by Adam McKay, who's done a lot of really funny and interesting movies.
Yeah.
That is about the...
And co-wrote Ant-Man, right?
I don't want to commit to that, but I didn't... I only saw Ant-Man on a plane, so I
you
may
saw
have,
it on the small screen, like saw, Ant-Man intended.
I actually saw it on an ant-sized screen, yeah, and I got to say, great. It really added to the, really, you know, made the film resonated. But the that movie is about the financial collapse, essentially.
Yeah,
that's gonna be good. That's gonna be good. That's gonna win a bunch of Oscars, I think.
Is that our segue too into politics?
I think it is.
About
Let's
politics?
Talk about politics.
Let's talk about.
No, we have time. We have a few minutes. Yeah. So this is something I actually didn't. So I was like, yeah, Attack of the Show, and oh, I did also want to ask you about writing for awards shows because my producer Magnus, who's Swedish, told me that you've written for awards shows, and I have. Let's spend like 2 minutes on that. I just want to explain to me what award shows you've written for and what it's like, or just tell me what the process of writing for an award show is and how either good or bad it is.
Well, years ago, this was actually my first gig at G4, was writing for they had a big award show called G4ia. It was an award show they were making up and that they would give video game awards to video games.
Didn't they just – this was a video game award show last night.
There was, yeah. And look,
not G4. G4.
But G4 had the right idea at the wrong time.
Right.
And maybe the execution wasn't so great.
You think the executives at G4 are like, Jesus fucking Christ, this is – you know, they must be so pissed right now. Hopefully they still have executive jobs somewhere. But
I don't know. Yeah, I'm sure – I was grateful for the experience and I was grateful too. It really made me very – look, writing an hour of TV every day with like just a couple of other people really makes you fast and then – makes you a wonderful amnesiac where you're I can't worry about a sketch that went wrong yesterday. I have to focus on today. So you just keep moving and moving and moving and wrenching. And that really helped with the comic book stuff too because, look, a screenwriter might write one screenplay a year, two screenplays a year, maybe more if they're prolific.
Right.
You know, I'm doing 3 or 4 comics a month. You know, those are 25-page scripts where you just are going, I'm going to make them the best that I can and move forward. But back to the really quick about the award shows. Yeah. They are so surreal.
I'm sure.
I remember actually I met you know, they hired G4 came to me and they're like, we know you need some other writers. We found a team. And I was like, oh, good. You get two writers for the price of one. And they're like, no, there are 3.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, oh, my God. I was like, well, this could be bad. Maybe they're no good.
Yeah, 3. It's like then it's like 3 versus 1.
You know who it was? It was the Lonely Island guys. They had
really?
Just gotten to town. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Really?
Andy, Keeve, and Yorm.
Is this prior to them doing all of their video stuff they were doing? Like,
no.
Before?
Literally, we were all like, they were doing them sort of in the background. Like, I remember
like the two?
Like I was holding a laptop. We were basically filming those Keeve and Yorm rapping on the G4 set. It's in one of the videos. I'm holding the laptop. And, you know, because, look, the set looked great. It was well lit. And we were like, fuck it. Let's get up there and, like, you know, we'll steal the shot.
Why not use the resources you've got at hand? I mean, that's interesting that they were – I mean, I'm not surprised to hear that, I guess. But that stuff was so proto, like, internet video. The stuff they were doing was, like,
totally.
The early days of really viral, like, internet comedy, which did not really exist before that era.
It was fun to sort of – watch it all happen.
So you guys wrote this G4ia award show together.
Yeah, and then, you know, we wrote that one together, and then I think we did another one. But then there was, like, there were a lot of – it was the golden age of fake award shows, like VH1's big in 05, and you're like, well, what was big this year? We're just going to give away awards.
That was an actual award show?
It was literally an award show, and they got – I forget who it was. I know Puff – I think – I don't know whether he was P. Diddy or Puff Daddy. He showed up to give a Maverick Award, I think, to like Ashton Kutcher. And none of this means anything. But when he got there, they were like, listen, Puff's going to need an award. And we were like, wait, what? And it's like, okay, so let's write another award for someone to give him.
You're saying at the event,
yeah,
they're like, he's going to want to also be presented with an award?
No sense letting him leave empty-handed.
I see. So let's quickly think of an
hitch.
So what was
the
award?
I don't know. I don't remember.
But it could have been
I remember from that year, though? I remember from that year of a knock on the door of someone. Probably now I'm going to be blackballed from writing entertainment award shows.
Oh, no. Don't worry. Nobody listens.
There was a knock on the door, and it was like, hey, Bai Ling has a problem with her copy.
Wow.
And I was like, all right, well, let's go check this out. And, I don't know what was going on in that trailer, but that was, like, a real thing.
That's amazing.
I think she just sort of wanted to see what was going on, but there was various states of undress.
Oh, really? Really?
Oh, yeah.
She came in or you went there?
I went in full nude just going, look, it's like, a power move.
You're like,
I'm going to show her who's boss.
I know that you're changing, but I don't want you to feel uncomfortable. So I've removed all of my clothes and have an erection. I'm sorry, but I just want you to be comfortable. Okay, I feel like I've gotten a really good view into the world of award shows. I love the idea that awards are just made up. I mean, let's just be clear. It's not like they actually are meaningful. It's not like, I mean, yes, you can have like your peers are like, oh, you're so great. Here, we gave you an award. But they are just like, I mean, I can give anybody an award if I want to. Nobody's stopping me.
I was sort of waiting, seeing if one was going to come my way.
Well, guess who's been nominated and has won Best Comic Writer of the Year in the Tomorrow Awards?
Yeah, and the Tamaris.
Yeah, the Tamaris.
You know what's fun, though?
What's
the other side, though, of the award show is the non-televised ones. They can be death, but Patton Oswalt does such a good job hosting them in town.
Well, he did the Webbies, I was at maybe 2 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty entertaining.
Yeah.
I presented something to somebody, I think. He was very professional.
He's a nice guy.
He was too nice.
A funny guy.
Too nice.
But the industry ones can be really fun.
So give me an example. What's an industry award?
Like the VES Awards, the Visual Effects Society Awards. So they're not televised. No one is. And, you know, those are peer voted. And those always have, too, the student reels. They bring in the best student visual effects designers. And so you're really seeing something. You're seeing the future of visual effects. It's really neat.
And you have to imagine those kinds of awards are actually more meaningful. If you get a bunch of, like,
yeah,
visual effects nerds voting on it, they're going to be like, yeah, that explosion was dope. That was a legitimately advanced explosion. We've never seen anything like that.
Patton hosted the year that Gravity was... And I think Patton riffed this. He walked out and he said, welcome to the first annual Gravity Awards. Because Gravity was actually nominated against itself. So the guys
like
that
people
were doing,
who worked on certain...
Yeah, yeah, it was Gravity Interior and Gravity Exterior for best visual effects of the year. So like the stuff inside the space station was going up against the explosions up in outer space.
Gravity's
just crazy.
Who won?
Gravity won, by the way.
Oh, thank God. Thank God. Woo.
And The Hobbit. Wait, what?
Yeah, it's like, where did that come from? How mad would the Gravity people be? They're like, we thought this was a lock. We really thought there are no other nominees in this category.
And they can fix it in post, right? They can just give themselves the award.
That's a great – there it is. There's the
joke for one.
There exactly is the chops that you need to write for an award show.
Yes. That's right.
That's exactly what they're looking for. Okay, so let's talk politics because I didn't realize this, but you're kind of a political person, politically minded person.
I'm sort of fascinated by where we're going.
So you're in L.A., not a great moment in California's history the last couple of days.
No.
With this shooting. Was it 2 days ago?
I think. Yeah, either two or three. No. San Bernardino shootings.
Yeah, and pretty bad, pretty nasty stuff. I mean, I think I don't know how you feel. I saw you were saying about Bernie Sanders. I think it was a complimentary thing about Bernie Sanders. I feel like we're living in a I'll just give you my take on this, and then I want to hear your take on what's going on politically in this country. I feel like we're living right now in the beginning of the death throes of, like, right-wing conservative Christian right-wing thought is, like, on its way out
That's the optimistic view. Yeah.
It is. I'm the optimist. What's your take on it? What do you think is going on?
I think as Bernie Sanders's message will, as it resonates, I think people will realize that they have not been voting their interest, and that they look. I think I guess I'm as left can get, but like
I'm more left.
I mean, I'll be to the right of you, but I think the only, like, I'm down to sort of thinking, and I know that this is going to sound crazy and dire, but I basically have come to the conclusion that the only chance this country has is to turn a little towards socialism. And I think the things that Bernie Sanders is saying make a lot of sense. And as his message, you know, I saw Killer Mike, opened a rally for him, and it made me feel like that there was some real progress there, because, you know, the machine is sort of built so that we'd all just accept, I think, Hillary Clinton as the candidate.
Right.
But I know that there are a lot of people out in America who, even if you thought that she was the better candidate, that would simply just never vote for a Clinton again. And now, the last couple of days, we've had polls, though, that do show that Bernie Sanders is the most electable versus that entire GOP field.
I
know that's not saying much.
It's saying something. Here's the thing that's interesting, though. And by the way, I like Bernie Sanders. I like his, by the way, his gun policy has not been great. His one place that I think I'm surprised, given all of the other stuff that Bernie Sanders seems to be into, his gun policy has not been great, and
it's
very true. I'm curious to see how that changes, or if it changes. I mean, everybody else, by the way, this is the election of giving people passes, right? Because, you know, Hillary Clinton's like, yeah, I just changed my mind on it. You know, that's just what happened. And it's like, okay, fine. Everybody's changing their mind on stuff. So I hope.
And you know what, though? Sorry to interrupt, but that's important, because I think so much of our internet culture is sort of built on, like, you know, shaming someone and then doing a victory dance.
Yeah.
You one up them, but, like, isn't it better to sort of change someone's mind?
You just described. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I think that there has to be room for people to sort of have that moment of, you know what, I thought that back in the day, now I think this, because that's, you know, I think the only chance that Bernie has to get elected, because socialism has been such a terrible, horrible word for so many years.
But that's like, actually, that is progress. I mean, that is progressive to change your opinion on something and have it be a better opinion. I think, by the way, you just said people shaming people and then doing a victory dance, which basically describes Donald Trump's entire platform.
Let's talk about Trump, though. You're absolutely right. But nothing that he has done has ever hurt him in the polls.
No. He's bulletproof. I mean,
like this terrible demon. He can't be dinged.
There's been some great articles written about this, but there is, there is this basic truth about what's happening with Donald Trump, which is, like, he's made the media impotent in fact-checking him. Like, he basically has this direct line to his to his followers, and he has this direct line to speaking to the public through, like, social media. And he uses that direct line in a way that because he's not a politician, he doesn't use it in politically safe ways. And I'm not lauding him for doing it, but it basically allows him – it gives him this kind of, like, this power to just – do and say whatever he wants, and nobody can. You cannot fact check him. He's moving too quickly. Like,
he's so grossly honest. Like, right. He's
grossly honest in his dishonesty. It's like,
yes, he's every time out there he steps out and lies, but he doesn't care.
I mean, Bernie Sanders is
wrapping himself in it.
Bernie Sanders is kind of the, like, anti-Trump in many ways, because he's also, like, It seems like it's very difficult for him to not say things like the word socialism, which is completely insane to hear from any political candidate in America at any time in our lifetimes. I mean, no one says it, but it's true. I mean, and it's worth saying that, like, most of the industrialized countries that we look at and we think of as allies and we think are doing well, the kind of well that we think is success and with a country that's healthy, they have massive amounts of what would be described as socialism as part of their policies, right?
Absolutely.
And we're the only ones that resist. We resist so hard. And I think some of it is, listen, I get it. States' rights. I think there's places where that should exist. I think that we obviously have a very diverse, very large country. But the reality is some of this stuff is just like common sense and we're not using common sense. And I think it's interesting. Your theory is that people will start voting in their best interests as opposed to against their interests.
Here's the thing is this, that in 10 years, the job of Uber driver probably is not going to exist. That'll be automated, right? Or by and large, maybe not in 10 years, maybe it'll be 10 years after. But like we're on this road where technology is going to catch up and this society is going to change. And like the Apple car, maybe you're not going to buy the Apple car. Maybe you'll summon the Apple car with your phone. So that like the job that you go and do as a driver when you lose your other job, that job won't even exist. So I do think that my hope is that people will sort of understand. And, you know, I don't think I'm expecting nor am I promising that, like, stuff's just going to start dropping down your chimney.
Right.
But I do think, you know, let's move to a single-payer health care system. Let's put money into infrastructure and highways and just the grab that happened, all this wealth just went up into the air and it just
went down into bank accounts and offshore accounts that are not taxed and that are – I mean, you know, it is the concentration of wealth, and that's something that Bernie Sanders talks about a lot, I think, is like, is this factor, this like secret factor that it seems like, you know, when you hear candidates argue about estate taxes, you know, they're talking about an argument on estate taxes for millions and millions of dollars. They're talking about like at the very highest level of, and the people who are voting like, yeah, I don't want you to mess with my estate taxes. They're like, because I'm going to have millions of dollars that I'm going to leave my family. And it's like, well, not in a climate where the person who currently has all the money is arguing to keep more of the money for themselves. Like, that's just not how it works. It's not like they just lift everybody. If they lifted everybody up, everybody in America, we wouldn't have no poverty in America, you know? We have the richest people in America.
I mean, there's no reason that this country should have kids going hungry and, you know, I just – there's so many things that
– I mean,
look, that's why I think Trump is sort of the perfect mirror for America right now. He's ugly, loud, and sort of my hope is –
selfish.
That
selfish.
Yeah, and selfish. So selfish.
Ugly, loud, and selfish is the perfect way to describe Trump. I mean – and I mean ugly physically. I mean he's got ugly rhetoric.
Yes, just an ugly like soul.
Yeah. I mean he's a bad guy. Soul. This is the thing. The second he said – this is what I don't get about Trump. We live in fucking America, okay?
Yeah.
And the second somebody gets up on stage who's running for president and says something that is openly racist about people, like,
and
sorry.
And is applauded.
He's applauded. It's openly racist. It's also wrong.
Yes.
Let's forget about fact-checking for a second. But, like, the second you are basically openly racist on a stage, you have forfeit your – you have forfeit your right to become president in this country. Like, this is a country, one of the most diverse countries, one of the most accepting countries. I mean, we are built on the backs of immigrants. We are built with immigrants. Almost everybody I know here has a grandmother, grandfather who literally were immigrants to this country. And so the idea that a person would get up on stage, I get you're worried about the immigration problem. Totally get it. The idea that you would get up and actually be racist and say racist things. And he's like, he said some anti-Semitic shit the other day about, he's like, you Jews are good negotiators, right? Literally,
yeah,
he said,
like, I would negotiate like one of you guys.
To a group of Jews. He's like you guys, you know, you're good with money. It's like, listen, the guy just sucks as a person. Do you really want this dope to be president? Like, I'm sorry, he may be very good at business. In fact, people tell him all the time how great he is at business, but he's kind of a shithead who sucks.
He's a racist.
And yet
he's going to be – my assumption is now he's going to be the nominee. I don't think they can stop that.
Oh, that's great. I want him to be the nominee because I think – here's what I – honestly, you know, in some ways I love Bernie Sanders. I think his policies are better. Hillary Clinton is, I think, a monstrous debater. I think she is very, very good. I think she knows her shit. I think she's a trained attack politician. And I feel like she would eviscerate Trump in a debate.
Well, can I tell you, though, that if Hillary is the candidate, I'm going cartwheeling into the ballot box, and I'm voting for Hillary.
Right.
Because so far, the only thing we have on the other side is a total clown show.
No, it's like Trump makes Ben Carson look reasonable, which is really problematic because Ben Carson is a complete lunatic.
Well, Ben Carson I feel like he's sort of makes everyone over on that side of the aisle just feel better about their racist views. Like that they've included Ben Carson somehow. I don't know.
You feel like that is tokenism from the Republican Party.
Yes.
It's interesting. I mean, I can see how that could be the case. I mean, I couldn't possibly know what's in the hearts and minds of the Republican leadership. What I do know is they have a party that seems extremely lacking in diversity. I would hope for their sake they're doing anything and everything they can to encourage people of color, anybody who isn't a white guy, to be part of the process.
Well, the way that they've curtailed voting rights, they're going the other way.
They're basically a bunch of racists. I agree with
you. Yes.
Don't get me wrong.
It's not, you know, instead of trying to look if opening the party and making it broader and have appeal across those kind of demographics is not in their financial best interest.
Well, just like right, and of that, course, which is what drives that party, basically.
Yes. So, I'm going to give you a couple of crazy predictions.
Okay, good. This is good. And then, unfortunately, we have to wrap. This is actually, I wish we'd gotten this earlier because now I'm like really fired up and I'm loving. First off, I'm loving that you're agreeing with me just because that's nice to hear. But let me hear your predictions.
Just really quick. I think the GOP convention could be contested, meaning like
Trump
may
gets
have
the nomination.
The support. Yeah, but then there may be some stuff going on behind the scenes, which it would just be fun to see a contested convention.
Yeah.
And then I think, look, I don't know. Am I crazy? I feel like Bernie Sanders is going to be the Democratic candidate.
I have trouble seeing that because of the sheer power the power that they wield in that party is. And I agree with you. I think in many ways that Bernie is a better, actually on paper, a better candidate.
But that's starting to win out.
Well, I think that's a beautiful, hopeful dream that you've got, and I'm behind it. I'll be happy that it's not – that our president, our fucking next president is not Donald Trump, okay? I don't really at this point – you know what? Just Jeb Bush, fine, whatever. Just don't let it be Donald Trump. Well,
you know, who will Jeb leave his 3% to when he drops out?
Oh, God.
Who will he ask his followers?
That party is a nightmare. Just give me one rational candidate. Just
well, they've all been
want.
Chased out. Right. They've all been run out of town. Reagan couldn't get elected today. He'd be too radical. He'd be too lefty.
Too leftist. Yeah. All right. Listen, Jerry. I'm sorry. We got to wrap up. This was so fun, so good. We have to do
Thank
this again.
Thank you so much for
next
having
Next time
me.
You're
nice
in New York, when you are physically here, we'll do it in the studio. Or next time I'm in LA, maybe I can grab you and pull you into
that'd
the studio.
That'd be great. I'll be back in the winter.
But this is fantastic. Thank you so much for doing it. And you've got to definitely come back.
I would love to come back. Thank you. This was a lot of fun.
That's it for the show. We'll be back next week with more tomorrow, of course. And as always, I wish you and your family the very best, though it's unfortunate their part of the Marvel Universe is ending.